Today is October 18th, 2022. I'm Stephanie Birch, and I'm here with Mary Goddard. We are on Zoom. I'm calling in from Anchorage, Alaska, and Mary is calling in from Sitka, Alaska. Thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed today. As you know, we will be talking about the various uses of plants, and this and other recordings regarding ethnobotany and ethnomedicine will become part of the oral history collection at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and will be placed online in an ethnobotany project jukebox hosted by the university. So Mary, thank you so much for sharing your story today. Let's start with traditional introductions. Can you please ground us in where you are from and who your family is, your name and the name of your parents and grandparents, and where they are from?
Well, my name is Mary Goddard, and I am living in Sitka right now, home of the Tlingit, Tlingit Haani, and I am originally from Yakutat, and I am Tlingit Eagle Brown Bear. I'm Kagwantan, and I run a food blog called Forest Fresh Alaska with my family.
Thank you so much. And can you tell us about your first memories of plants, working with plants, playing with plants?
That's a fun one. early memories. I would say early memories would probably be drying black seaweed with my parents or with my family, going out harvesting. It was something that my grandmother really loved. Eating was the black seaweed, and of course we really enjoyed it growing up as well. And so we would go out and harvest black seaweed, and then we would, on a sunny day, hopefully the day was sunny, and we would put sheets out on boards and spread the seaweed out and let it sun dry.
And then what would you do with the seaweed?
So with the black seaweed, that was something that we would just eat as a snack growing up. And then I remember, later on when I got a little bit older, my parents would sell it as well. You know, either use it as a trade or sell it to people that weren't able to go out and harvest black seaweed.
Wow, that's fun. That sounds wonderful. And how old were you when you realized that plants were both food and medicine? What would you say?
Oh, you know, that's a really good question. So we grew up with, a lot of subsistence living, living off, fish and moose meat and some plants like seaweed, like black and red. But I also would visit family in Missouri, and their plants were so different there that it was one of the things that drew me into learning more about plants. So probably in my late elementary school years, I would, just pick up books and start learning just a little bit. I just always had a curiosity about it.
And what was one of the first plants that called out to you to explore more?
When I came back to Alaska, about 2011, and it's then that I really started getting into the plants in Southeast Alaska. And one that I was really intrigued with was elderberries, because it was one that my grandmother used to make syrup growing up. And knowing that elderberries was a very, popular plant in today's like homeopathic medicines, I just wanted to learn a little bit more. And so from there, I actually make tinctures out of the elderberry flowers and out of the elderberries to use as medicine during cold season. And I've really found that the the elderberry flowers make a more efficient tincture than the berries, in my experience.
How so? Tell me more about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, the flavor, of course, is different, but it seems like when I make the tinctures out of the flowers, that it fights the colds better. And this is just from my personal experience. And then the berries, seems like it works, but not as well. Maybe not as efficient. And so if I can, each summer I like to get the elderberry flowers and make a tincture to have on hand.
Wow, that's interesting. How do you make the tincture?
You know, I know there's a couple of different ways to make tinctures, but I kind of do it the simple way. So you just grab a big jar and you shove the jar full of the elderberry flowers or the berries, depending on what you're doing. And, if they're flowers or berries, always make sure that they're washed, or that with the flowers, they set out just a little bit, shake them off, make sure there's no bugs on there. And then you pour 80 proof vodka over the flowers or over the berries until it fills the jar. And you screw the lid on tight and you shake it twice a day for 6 weeks, and you keep it in a dark place, and that extracts all those medicinal goodness, I guess, from the berries and the flowers.
Wow, that's wonderful. Can you tell me something about your teachers and mentors who would have taught you some of those things?
I guess, when it came to gathering seaweed, my parents did that and taught us, and same with berry picking. But as far as having any mentors or teachers when it comes to other forage plants, I don't really have any. It was just a lot of books. One that I really liked was Janice Schofield's book on discovering wild plants. And that was a really good go-to.
Yeah, I think that's a classic.
It is. So good. Everyone needs that one in their library.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you have any other books or booklets or websites that you like to reference?
Gosh, now there's becoming more and more, but even 10 years ago, there wasn't seemingly too much out there. Let's see, what's another book? I have a couple on my bookshelf. Let me see. The Boreal Herbal. That one's good. And then let me look at this name more. Hold on. Plant Lore of an Alaskan Islander. That one's good. And then what else? There's some things I did learn from some Tlingit elders, which I wouldn't remember who they are, but I just remember at some various points of my life here, Tlingit elders pointing out different plants and their medicinal benefits. One in particular I could remember, I make jewelry. And I was using usnea as a filler for my jewelry boxes because it didn't snag on the spruce root jewelry that I made. And the Tlingit elder had come up and said, "Oh, you're giving everyone medicine, And she explained to me that boiling usnea as a tea was really good for the respiratory system. And it was something that she did growing up.
Wow.
And so I don't know if you've ever tried usnea.
I have not, no.
But when you make it, it does very much taste like a medicine. And it's really important because of uric acid, or there's something in the usnea that you have to blanch out first. So when you first get the usnea, you blanch it and then you boil it for about 10 minutes to make a tea. And it does taste like medicine, so I always suggest mixing it with a little honey and a little orange juice, and it kind of takes away some of that bitterness.
Just to make it a little more palatable.
Yeah.
You know, I find it fascinating that, you know, what you were saying earlier, you know, your own observation with elderberries and flowers of the elderberries and, you know, picking up things from members in the community. And with your in your experience, do you work with plants? And, like, how do you learn about plants, I guess, my question? If it's not from others, just for yourself, how do you develop a relationship with a plant, and how do you, I guess, get to know a plant?
Oh, I love that you said that, because I just recently had a chat with Matt Goff, who does like Sitka Nature photos, and he does a like not a podcast, but he does a radio show on Raven Radio, and we talked about getting to know your neighbors, which are, you know, your plants. And it's true. It's one of those things that typically how I try to learn about it is pick one a year that's I'm highly interested in, one or two, and get to know it that year. Like, okay, when is it sprouting out? When is it ready to be harvested? You know, and then experimenting a little bit more with it. So like one of the plants I did that with was the deer heart greens. And that was a plant that another Tlingit elder woman was just showing me. She's like, hey, you can eat these. We used to nibble on these as we, you know, walk on the trails. And if you go into any book or online, there's no reference that people eat deer heart greens. You know, I think there's one website that mentions eating the berries. And I always laugh about that because I feel like the berries are the least palatable of the whole plant. And with the deer heart greens, just experimenting, like, okay, do they taste better when they first come up? You know, you're experiencing it all because there's sometimes nobody that's really teaching you. Is it better to be cooked? Is it better to be dried? You know, and so we've developed some really fun recipes just with the deer heart greens, you know, making a pesto with them, using it later in the season when the leaves are really big and beautiful, using them to wrap fillets of or cuts of salmon and baking with it. Our last, since, you know, right now it's October, so the end of the season, the stalks are really big and the leaves are pretty much, you know, gone. They're not good to be eaten right now, but the stalks taste very much like a celery or a vegetable, like a celery. It has a little different taste, but that's how we've been using it. So just discovering and experimenting along the way.
That's amazing. I don't think I've heard of deer heart greens and the recipes.
You have to check it out on Forest Fresh. I mean, it's such a beautiful little plant. It's kind of like it will cover the forest floor, and typically you'll find them around ferns.
Okay.
And they spread pretty fast. So once you get them, it seems like you'll have a good little patch of them.
Propagate plants? Would you plant plants in certain areas just so you know where to harvest them in the future?
You know, I don't, but only because I have access to so much land. Like, even our backyard, we have a pretty amazing backyard where it's, you know, the forest is right behind us. And so if I wanted to get, you know, fiddleheads or deer heart greens or devil's club or a lot of these plants, is right there in my backyard. So there's not too much work I have to do.
Amazing.
really? I mean, I have an elderberry tree. I have huckleberries. I feel pretty lucky. I have quite a bit of amazing plants just in my backyard.
Yeah. And you don't want to trade it in for a lawn?
No. Absolutely not. We do have a little spot that's a lawn, but you know. for the most part.
No, that's wonderful. Can you share some of your harvesting techniques, since you talked about going out and harvesting, and any protocols or any principles that you follow?
Sure. Yeah, I think if you understand the plant, just knowing like how to harvest it, you know, like if you are harvesting greens, or you know, it's not ripping them up by the root, it's like, you know, cutting them, like if it's fiddleheads, you can cut the fiddleheads off or pinch them off, and they'll continue growing. And then not taking everything, so like if there's a big cluster of fiddleheads that are coming up, not taking all of them, just taking some sparingly and moving on to the next patch. And so, yeah, and just being mindful of what you take, you utilize. And what else? What's another practice? You know, I heard with Usnea, well, I interviewed this lady a while ago, and she had said with Usnea, she's like, oh, we only harvest it when it's like, I think it was like when it was, and it's funny, I can't remember if it was rainy or sunny, but she had a thing where she only harvested it if it was sunny or rainy, whatever it was that she chose. But I try to just harvest it when I need it, you know, or if I'm going to utilize it right away. Currently we're at this phase of not over extracting when it comes to our plants and our berries. Like, we're just at that awareness stage. And so I feel as we grow, and if this becomes an industry here in Alaska, and people are harvesting and foraging a lot more, that policies will probably have to be in place. But currently, I feel like we're still just at that discovery stage.
Right, where it's still somewhat sustainable for people to go out and play and harvest and...
Yeah.
What do you think, what kind of policies do you have in mind? Do you have an idea?
Well, you know, I just remember a couple of years ago speaking at a plant conference in Anchorage, and they had asked, like, someone was appalled that we didn't have certain things in place. Like, you can only harvest this much, or you have to have a permit. And it kind of, you know, really brought to my awareness that there is places that can be over harvested. However, right now we're at the point of, you know, salmon berries and huckleberries go rotten on the vine or rotten on the branches before people pick them. You know, people are still buying berries in the store instead of going out and harvesting what's right in their backyard because of maybe they don't have the education of these are actually good for you, they're not poisonous. You know, I think there's this huge education piece that is still highly needed where we live. And then should there, you know, come a point of this has to be managed, then we'll put those things into place.
Right.
I guess I could think of one, like, for an example, I think it's Norway has a cloudberry festival. And cloudberries are so popular there that when they are ripe, there's the people that live in the community get, there's like a day, like a cloudberry festival where this is the day you can go pick cloudberries. You get timed, and as soon as that timer's up, the next person gets to go pick. So we're not quite, you know, we're not
there. Wow.
Not saying we couldn't be, but right now I feel like we're at this phase of like encouraging people to harvest what we have here because it can provide for you. It could really sustain you.
Right. We still have more natural resources than people take advantage of when
mm-hmm.
it comes to plants and berries. And yeah. I live in Anchorage, and some places do get over harvested up here.
Okay.
But I guess in, you know, less populated areas, that's not yet an issue.
Yeah, and it definitely could be if people start using it for businesses, right? So I think there is some policies or some permits and stuff already in place for certain things, but not on all the plants.
Right, and I guess it depends on, you know, who owns the land and what are you allowed to do and who do you need to ask permission and the others. Yeah, I think those are more pertinent issues in more populated areas for sure.
Right, yeah.
So I was curious when you said that you heard from this one person that they only harvest at a, you know, in certain weather conditions. Or do you have a preference or a practice, you know, harvest in the morning versus in the evening or sunny days, rainy days?
You know, I really don't. And I think it just depends on, for me, it depends on when I have the time or there's certain plants like berries are better to be picked, you know, and I feel like after sunshine, you can go pick them in the rain before they all fall off the branches. But if you can get them before it's really rainy and before they're bogged down with water, I think you know, get a different flavor or more flavor. And then with other plants, I really don't have any particular times.
Okay. What kind of berries do you harvest? You mentioned a couple.
Yeah, let's see. There's several different berries here. We have, of course, salmon berries. We have the red huckleberries and the black huckleberries, which people call blueberries. And then we also have blueberries. Growing up in Yakutat, we had cranberries. We have gray currants, which are one of my favorites. We have the elderberries, which we use for medicine or for syrup. There's Jacob berries. There's watermelon berries. And I think that's about it. Yeah.
And do they, and I think in the Sitka area, do they ripen pretty much at around the same time? Or is there
like, you know, that's a really good question. So it's changing quite a bit. And I would guess it would be from climate change. But we've had, last year was really weird. We had the huckleberries and the blueberries ripen before the salmon berries, which typically never happens. You know, typically you have your salmon berries and then you'll have your huckleberries later. But yeah, last year it was just really odd. The salmon berries got ripe after the huckleberries and I didn't quite understand that.
Interesting.
A lot of changes for sure.
What are some of the other changes you've noticed, if you can think of any?
It's just not super consistent when things are ripe or ready to be harvested. I feel like the last several years with the weather changes, you don't know when. Like, I think when I first moved here, I was kind of tracking like when things would be ripe, trying to write it down because it's not something I think about. Like, when they're ripe, I go harvest them. But when you're trying to teach it, you have to kind of be a little more mindful, right, of when this is ripe and when you can harvest it. And I feel like it's just kind of been all over the board the last couple of years.
So do you find that it's just things ripen earlier or later every year and there's not really any consistency anymore?
Yeah, definitely something's coming earlier, you know? Like I was saying, the huckleberries last year and then the salmon berries being later. So I don't really know exactly how that works, but... And then I think, too, it depends if it's warmer in the beginning of the year, then things start, you know, coming to be. And then if it snaps back into a cold freeze, it can kind of change that season, you know.
Do you start seeing patterns, like with what you just said with the weather, like where you start in the beginning of the summer, depending on what the weather is doing, you kind of get a sense of what might happen? Or is it just That's too much all over question. The place?
Yeah, I don't want to say it's like all over the place, but it's definitely been a little bit different the last couple of years. I feel like it's been maybe a little more predictable previously. Like, okay, you know that, you know, come July, the salmon berries are out, or, you know, there's some consistency, and now it doesn't seem to be as consistent.
How has the weather changed in the last few years?
We've seen kind of been all over. We had about 2 years ago, we had a ton of storms in the fall time and a lot more rain, less snow. And the temperatures have gone up. So with that temperature rising, I think even the temperature in the ocean's rising a little bit. So it changes. I'm sure even like the ocean plants, like the seaweeds.
Do you still harvest seaweeds?
I do. You know, it kind of depends if I have the time or if I make the time to go harvest. This year we harvested some bladderwrack. And I felt like that went longer into the season this year. Lasted a bit longer, but yeah, we were able to harvest some bladderwrack, and you know, that's a really good medicinal seaweed. So it's one of those seaweeds that, you know, it's not like the black or red ribbon where you can eat handfuls of it at a time. You'd probably eat a lot less of it than some of the other seaweeds at one time.
And what was that called again?
Bladderwrack, or a common name is popweed.
And then how do you use that medicinally?
Well, I think just eating it, right? I think you can eat it or you can make a tea out of it. I've never tried it as a tea, but I have read that you can do that. We just dry it and, you know, you can snack on it. Or one way, my favorite way of preparing it was, you know, it has a jelly-like substance in the inside. And when you cook with it, it's really rich. We used it one time under the skin of a whole chicken that we baked, and it almost acted like a butter around the chicken. It was really good.
Wow. we'll be right there for dinner.
Right? Come on over. But it's just interesting because, like, when you experiment with the different seaweeds or the different plants, you know, that's something that I kind of learned just through experimenting that with bladderwrack, when you cook with it, you use a whole lot less. You almost treat it like a fat, like a butter. Whereas some of the other seaweeds you would treat as a vegetable, right? Like a whole lot more to your dish. It's really palatable and delicious. And whereas some of the stronger seaweeds, like that bladderwrack, you would use a whole lot less.
Right, that makes sense. And then what are some of the medicinal qualities of the bladderwrack?
I know it's good for thyroid functions. So if you have any thyroid issues, a lot of people homeopathically would use that. The amounts, I'm not sure. But I know that's one thing that it's supposed to have been really good for.
Awesome. And tell me about some of the other seaweeds you're using. Like, I'm, again, you know, up here in Anchorage, seaweeds is not really that popular here, at least in my harvesting world. So yeah, tell me more about seaweeds.
Well, the black seaweed is, you know, really traditional. It's just so delicious. And it's a nice hearty seaweed. And then there's red ribbon seaweed, which a lot of people add to their soups. And then one of my favorites is sea lettuce. And it's so different because it's a really, like, when you dry sea lettuce, it's like almost just crumbles, and it's just light, and it can dissolve in your mouth. And You know, so all the different seaweeds, there's like kelp, right? Kelp is a very different seaweed than like sea lettuce or black seaweed. And kelp is treated differently than black seaweed. A lot of people create kelp pickles or relishes or make sauces out of it. And with the sea lettuce, it's just wonderful to, you know, sprinkle on things and use it kind of as a seasoning. Yeah, that's, I guess, some of them.
Is there a time of the year when you like to harvest seaweeds?
Typically, it's springtime. You know, early spring is when you can go harvest, and it just depends on the length and if it's ready to be cut. And then kelp is a little bit different because rather than going at low tide and cutting from, you know, the rocks, you would go out and you would harvest from your boat. You know, you'd be able to see where those kelp forests are and be able to gather and harvest some from the actual ocean.
Take us out on a, if you will, on a little journey here of harvesting seaweeds at low tide. What does that look like? What kind of tools do you use? It's early spring, you're going out, it's low tide. What does that look like?
Yeah, you know, we would just take buckets or trash bags and scissors or a knife, and you know, you just don't want to you want to give it a, you know, you I guess you would go out and you would pull up the seaweed and you would instead of rip it from the hold fast, you would just cut it, and then or you can use scissors, just so you don't rip the kind of the yeah the hold fast of it. And same thing with like bladderwrack. If you go low tide and harvest bladderwrack, you would cut some of the fronds, and again, being mindful not picking all of the seaweed in that patch, but taking a little bit from each and kind of moving on so you don't deplete the harvest.
Okay, and then you have your bucket full of seaweed. What do you then? What do you do then?
Yeah, after that, you go down, you bring your bucket and you kind of rinse that seaweed in the salt water. And you want to make sure with your seaweeds that you're rinsing it in the salt water, not like fresh water, because it can kind of break down the seaweed. And then that salt water, of course, when you dry it, you know, it keeps with all that salty flavor. And yeah, you just want to rinse off any, you know, little shells or little bugs that are in the seaweed.
And you do that right with the ocean water on the beach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep, you just wash it in buckets and then take it home and dry it.
Amazing. That's awesome. That's such a great resource to have available.
Yeah, very lucky.
And are there any concerns about pollution of the oceans and how that might affect your seaweed harvests and products?
Yeah, for sure. It's something I think about. I mean, you know, I was out gathering some seaweed just for my for a garden the other day. And you know, you're just getting seaweed that's washed up. It's nothing that you're harvesting fresh for your garden. But you know, there was some trash that I saw in there and I thought, oh man, wouldn't that be kind of a shame to scoop this up, and you're planting your garden and you find a plastic fork or a mask or something gross, you know. So
Right.
it definitely is a concern.
And then when you dry your seaweed, you just store it in. How do you store it?
Stored in like plastic Ziploc bags in a dark spot, or sometimes I use jars. A big jar, and I just keep it in a. It's like any other dried food. You just want to store it in a cool, dark spot.
And how long does it last? Not
Well,
in terms of, well,
depends
probably,
how.
yeah, sorry. How long
Depends
does it last?
on who's in your house and eating your
Yeah.
food.
Yeah, I realized I didn't ask that right. How long does it stay fresh or remain edible?
You know, probably about a year. You can probably get 2 years out of it as long as it really stays dry. I don't know if you've seen those little like stay dry packs that kind of absorb humidity or absorb.
Oh yeah, silica packs or.
Yeah, you can stick some of those in with your seaweed, and it'll help it last longer.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it starts losing its flavor after a year. You know, most things, the fresher it is, the better it is.
Right. Is there anything that you harvest during the winter?
Good question. You know, we're in fall time right now, and there's not really too much to harvest in the winter, but it was really fun. We just went out as a family, inspired by the show Chef vs. Wild. You know, my husband and I have a 7-year-old, and he watched that show with us, and it's all about what can you forage in the winter, and can you survive, and can you make a gourmet meal out of it? And so we actually went down to the beach and harvested some limpets, and there's still a little bit of beach greens that were still palatable, and we got, what else did we get? We got spruce to make tea, and usnea. We got deer heart green stalks, like the deer heart greens, the big stalks of them, and used that. There were still some dandelion greens. There was actually quite a bit that we were able to forage for and make a meal out of.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to, you know, kind of figure out what you can utilize this time of year.
And it's so great that your 7-year-old grows up with all that knowledge and just being surrounded by, you know, that practice of harvesting plants and, yeah,
he really loves it, so it makes it fun.
Do you have any specific plants you use medicinally throughout the year, and what would you use them for?
Yeah, let's see.
You talked a little bit about usnea and a little bit about some of the seaweed. Is there anything?
Yeah, I think there's some that I really rely on. One, you know, is what we talked about, the elderberry, mm-hmm. making tinctures out of the elderberry flowers. I think that one's really big. Usnea tea, you know, especially during COVID, it was like, oh man, we should be utilizing this because it really helps with respiratory issues. And then the other one would be, I guess, horsetail herb. You know, that one's really good for your joints. It's good for your hair. It's good for your, you know, I guess the nickname would be like athlete's tea. You know, it really kind of helps lubricate your joints and replace that cartilage in between. And so that's a really easy plant to identify and to make a tea out of, and just to incorporate, whether it's tea or soup, into your meals or your lifestyle, I guess.
How do you harvest horsetail, and when, and how do you process it?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different, so some people believe that you should harvest it early, just like most spring herbs. But then another theory is that you harvest it later in the season, which would be late summer, when it's really rich in silica. So when it's really, like, you know, really full. And so I've done it both ways, and I typically prefer it when it's later in the season. I just pick it, or I dry it really well. Like, you want to make sure if you're doing anything for teas that you dry it really well or use it immediately when it's fresh. So typically what I do is dry it really well, and then I'll make a big pot of horsetail tea, and I will flavor it with some honey and some lemon, and then I'll pour it over ice and make an iced tea. And it's really similar to like a nice refreshing green tea when you drink it.
That sounds delicious.
Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, coming back to the discussion on berries, how do you preserve your berries?
You know, I'm a big fan of freezing them.
Okay.
You know, growing up, we canned them, you know. We pretty much canned all of our salmon berries. I also make jams and syrups and jellies. But when I'm kind of in a pinch, especially for time, I just wash them, I freeze them, and then I incorporate them into our meals.
And all right, do you ever use herbs for like sauna or steam baths, or is that big in Southeast?
You know, it's really not that I know of. I'm trying to think. I guess there's one when I think of, I haven't used it in steam bath, but for some reason when you talked about it, it made me think of Labrador tea.
Okay.
That's a really medicinal tea, and it has just this like real fragrant smell to it. And I think with like some of these plants, it's you get to know them through smell, and it's one of those just kind of like invigorating smells.
Yeah, if there was a way of bottling up scents,
right?
I think Labrador tea and poplar would be the two that I would store forever.
Which one did you say? I missed it. Which one did you
say? Labrador tea and the poplar.
I'm sure there is. You know, there's been more people making salves, you know, like Devil's Club salves and birch salve and different salves. So I'm sure there's a way.
Labrador tea. Yeah, I was reminded of, in Southeast, you have all these big spruce trees. Do you do anything with those?
Yeah, in the, you know, spring, we harvest the tips, and you can use, you know, spruce tips in baking or making a spruce tip syrup or making a spruce tip honey or, we just harvested some spruce the other day with some licorice fern root and made a iced tea. So that was, you know, that was fun.
And what root was that? Sorry.
Licorice fern root.
Oh, okay.
And it's, you know, it's something that I haven't really actually experimented with, but if you eat the root or if you just have a tiny little taste of it, it's really strong of licorice. So we decided to use it a little bit and boil it with the spruce branch and make a tea.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, and speaking of saunas, I did hear that, so during the pandemic, we had read like spruce kind of wards off a lot of the germs and the bacteria that people back in the day would burn the spruce branches. So we would go outside in our outdoor fire pit and put spruce branches. And that's supposed to kind of help clean the air.
Wow. Okay. I did not know that.
And it smelled really good too.
So. Yeah, I bet it smells really good. I guess people have burned the pitch to keep bugs away and use it as fire starters. And
I guess, yeah, you said keep bugs away. Yarrow is another medicinal plant. I believe that helps. What was it? You can smell it, keeps bugs away. So typically when we're walking around outside, we'll grab a little piece of the yarrow and tuck it behind our ears. Kind of break it up so the oils come out and you can smell it. And that's another really good smelling plant that's very distinct. And it's supposed to keep bugs away.
Well, that's a better alternative than DEET, I guess. Dissolving all of your clothes and from DEET. All right. Do you have any other plans that come to mind that you would like to share with us today?
Man, there's so many different plants. I think that's the thing is, like, when it comes to plant, let your curiosity take you. Just be mindful of the ones that are poisonous. You know, I think it's good to really understand your poisonous plants first, or maybe not first, but before you start harvesting other plants, because then you're aware of which ones you should steer clear of. You know, experimenting is good, but if you're experimenting with a poisonous plant, not so good. And then also, what I've learned about plants in Alaska, or at least here, is that plants typically have different times where they can be harvested for food, different time they can be harvested for medicine, and another time that you probably don't want to harvest them. And so knowing that, the more you get to know a plant, the more you understand the best time it is to harvest it, when it's most palatable, when it's the most beneficial to be used for medicine. And that's just something that will come with utilizing the plant and really learning about it.
And that is specific for each plant, or are there some broad general principles across the board that you've noticed?
I feel like it's kind of just broad across the board. Like if you're learning about a plant, there's typically going to be a time that you can harvest it and another time that you should not harvest it, because it will either one not taste good, or it's not gonna, or it's gonna upset your stomach, or you know, there's different different plants have different benefits, I guess.
Yeah, and seasonally, I think their qualities change.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I guess one example that comes to mind is nettle. I think I hear that you're not supposed to harvest nettle for internal use once it starts flowering.
Yeah,
you can still use it for other external purposes.
Right. And I think too, one misconception I hear a lot is, that plant's poisonous, where it's maybe the plant's not poisonous, but it's just about harvesting it correctly. You know, like there's wild Indian celery that you can harvest, but if you don't peel the outer layer, it can, you know, irritate your skin. Or like elderberries, people are like, oh, they're poisonous. Elderberries are not poisonous. However, their seeds can be, you know, toxic. So you want to make sure your seeds are not in your syrup. So it's not just about knowing if those plants are edible, but it's also how to properly harvest them.
Oh, that is a really good point. Yeah. Certain aspects of a plant might be poisonous, but it doesn't mean the whole plant is poisonous. Or at a certain time of the year, it might be poisonous or toxic, but
It was just like fiddleheads, right? Like people harvest ferns or fiddleheads, and if you cook them and break down the enzymes properly, it's a very delicious side dish or addition to your meal. But if you don't cook them properly, it can leave you with a bad stomach ache. So just learning those things.
Yeah, and you can learn those things from books and from elders or teachers who have been using plants for a long time, or by experience.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, spending time with plants and I like your approach of picking one or two plants a year and exploring and developing your relationship with that one plant throughout the year.
Yeah, and then it doesn't seem so overwhelming because, like, if you look at, like, living in a rainforest, there's so many different plants.
Right.
And if you're trying to learn it all, it can be really overwhelming. So just trying to focus on one or two and taking your time with it, I think is beneficial.
Did you have a plant this year?
Gosh, you know, this year was a whole different ballgame. Let me see. The one thing that I experimented a little bit more with this year was bladderwrack. And so just eating it raw, tasting it raw, trying it different ways, just seeing how I liked it. And believe it or not, I was really surprised on really how nutty and good it was eating it raw. I don't know why. That was odd to me, but that was really good. And then we dried it one way this year with, we used a coconut sugar and we made almost like a caramel sauce over it and dried it that way. And it was so good.
Wow.
We did another one with like a jerk seasoning and yeah, my son wanted to just keep eating. He was just grabbing them and eating them. And I'm like, okay, just a little bit because, you know, it's a more potent of a plant. But it was really good.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
And it was, you know, the funny thing is it was kind of one of my least favorite seaweeds. And so I thought, okay, let me try to experiment a little bit with this and see. And sometimes I think with plants, you know, you either try it one way with just one traditional way or one way that you've learned and you stop there. But what we try to do with Forest Fresh is like really push the envelope on what can you do with it, really experiment with it, because then you can really kind of see, you know, how delicious is it? Is it palatable? Is it, you know, how do you want to best prepare it? So that's the exciting part.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that experimenting and playing and just, trying different ways that maybe other people haven't used.
Right.
How do you pick your plant? Like, how do you decide which plant to use or to focus on during the year?
You know, normally it's something that presents itself to me. Like if all of a sudden I'm noticing this plant, or, you know, like, oh, I've overlooked this plant or this, you know, like, what was it last year? I was trying to learn. I didn't really learn that much about it or experiment much, but I'm still really curious about it, which is the witch's butter or the jelly fungus. You know, we kept seeing it. My son and I kept seeing it everywhere when we'd go outside for a walk. And just learning that it's really medicinal and it shrinks, you know, tumors with the studies that they found. And just learning. Those things are really intriguing. So it's typically a plant that I've overlooked or I didn't notice, and all of a sudden it's appearing everywhere or it's on my mind, and I just kind of go where my curiosity takes me.
That's great. And then you also said that when you talked about the bladderwrack, that it wasn't your favorite seaweed, and yet you wanted to explore more and see if you can turn it into something that you would love in recipes.
Yeah, and it's just thinking, okay, why was it? Is it because I prepared it incorrectly? Did I get it at the wrong time of the year? You know, just all those little things to be mindful of.
Yeah, that's so great. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about? Anything that you would like to share? Any advice, suggestions, recommendations for the listeners?
You know, I guess check out forestfreshalaska.com. That's our blog. Let us know what you're interested in. You know, I try to ask people that follow us from time to time, like, what do you want to learn more about? And then we try to present that in a way that is how you can harvest this plant. This is how you can properly prepare it and make a delicious meal with it. So if you're interested at all, just, you know, shoot me a message and I'll help with the research.
Oh, that's wonderful. I hope you're going to get a lot of inquiries.
Yeah, me too. A lot of so much fun questions.
And speaking of the future generations, what is your one hope for the people and for your children and their children?
Yeah, I guess when it comes to plants and food security in Alaska, my one wish would be that we become very confident in our food production and harvesting, and that we'd be more reliant on our own communities rather than outside sources.
Wonderful. That's amazing. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, Mary. I really appreciate having you and interviewing you and hearing from you. And yeah, we'll be checking out your blog.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on here. And it was a lot of fun. I love talking about plants and especially the medicinal and edible aspects of them. So thank you. Thanks for including me.
Thanks.